Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Acquisitions Anonymous. I'm Mills Snell, one of your co-hosts. We have an awesome deal today. Despite me absolutely, you know, disparaging it as I read it, you'll find that we do get into a helpful conversation. So this is a telecom service-based business. It's about $5.5 million in revenue, $1 million in free cash flow. This is like the white whale for searchers and people looking for businesses. It's big enough to have some heft and have margin of safety, but not too big to be acquired by professional buyers already. And we talk about some kind of macroeconomic trends in this industry. And we talk about businesses in this kind of B2B space, along with the challenge to send us some more deals like this. So hope you enjoy. Thanks.
Today's sponsor is SMBash. Yeah, I made it to the conference last year in beautiful, sunny downtown Orlando, Florida. It didn't sun, by the way. It rained the whole time. But it was a great conference. So yeah, they're sponsoring again. And you know, I think we love that show. I love speaking at it. And I think totally recommend everybody consider going, especially if you're a small business owner operator who wants to think about M&A. You know, it's a great conference. So I know you missed it last year,
Mills. I was super bummed. I tested positive for COVID 1 hour before I was supposed to get on the flight. And I was like, maybe I could just ignore this, but it was definitely not the case. I got laid flat on my bottom.
I liked it because it really opened my eyes up to kind of the future of conferences. Like, I think the days of like Web Summit or like Dreamforce or these like huge, like giant conferences, like they're so lame. Like, I don't think anybody wants to go to those, but I think much more intimate type things like what SMBash guys did.
Super curated. Yeah.
Yeah. You get more focused content around what you're trying to do. You get people that are much more like you can have real conversations with people, and they can curate who comes. Like, I think all that's really cool. So next April in Austin. All right. Well, we're happy to support them, and we want them. So go there, and you can go to smbash.com. Is that right? SMBASH.com. Sign up. So tell them we sent you, and we'll go from there. Audience, please join our newsletter. We're trying to build it, and you can get an email every time we do an episode. And we also share the links to the deals. Got it. Okay. Or if you have our Twitter profile, you can do it there too. So yeah, sign up for our newsletter. You could join more than 100 other people on our newsletter currently as we go on a massive march to grow the newsletter. So today we got a killer deal. Are you guys excited for this Friday? Bill, are you excited?
I am super excited. This one is cool. I've never looked at a deal like this.
Awesome. Okay. So cool. So something unique. And Mills, you're going to read it. So let's go.
Yep. So we'll pull it up on the screen. But this is a telecom tower business with 80% maintenance services, primarily focusing on network overlay operations. This is from the firm Advisors. More to be said about that shortly. The price for the business is $3,950,000. Their revenue is about just under $5.5 million a year. And the cash flow that they're saying the business generates is $944,000. So about $5.5 million in revenue, about $1 million in free cash flow. They have 18 employees. It's project managers, construction managers, crew supervisors, some crews, one AR person, one accounts receivable person, one bookkeeper, and one CPA. The business is located in Mesquite, Texas. Michael, where is Mesquite?
It is on the southeast side of Dallas. So you are the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, primarily on the east side, so the opposite way from Fort Worth.
This telecommunication construction and management company has a primary focus on merging networks and overlaying technology into existing structures, which makes up 80% of their services. They also handle tower erection, site and tower inspections, electrical services, raw land construction, and compound maintenance and repairs, which account for the remaining 20%. They're located in Mesquite. This business operates out of a 6,000 square foot location and currently services 100% commercial clients. Their current team, we kind of went through that already. It's a skilled team. They're able to service the northern and western areas of Texas, as well as Oklahoma and Louisiana. They're in the final stages of signing with AT&T. I love when people do stuff like this, and I hate it. They're in the final stages of signing with AT&T as an active client to begin work by the end of 2022. How much do you want to bet that that contract has not been executed yet and it won't be executed by the end of 2022?
Yeah. Can I interrupt? Because this is entirely entertaining. You know, me and Bill, when we read deals, we try to remain some level of objectivity. At the worst, I'll just complain about the write-up. I love how you just come right out the gate and you're like, I hate everything about this.
Like, there's no objectivity. I'm just going to give you all my bias right now.
We're supposed to have a build up to the big finish here to make create a little story. And you're just like, okay, here's the ending.
I would rather poke holes in it as we go. All right. So they're actively working with a partnership towards Verizon. No surprise. While there are less than 10 major carriers within this industry, the spotlight has been brought to the top two carriers in the nation, providing that their customer concentration is the keystone to the company's success. I don't actually know what that means. The purchase of this business includes $800,000 worth of assets. The current owner handles general oversight and money management, including approving large purchases and payroll. He works roughly 25 hours a week and is mentoring a VP and up-and-coming operations manager. Some of his responsibilities could be absorbed by the current AR manager. Seller has offered a 1 to 2 year training. This is good. I like this. Training transition period to ensure this process is as smooth as possible for all involved. New ownership could expand geographically, sending dedicated teams nationwide. Priced at $3,950,000, this telecom company is ready for new ownership to step in and continue the excellent reputation that it's curated since 2009. So the business has been around for about going on 15 years. The current owner is invested in the future success of the business, and to illustrate this point, has offered 10% of seller financing and 10% equity roll if the buyer desires. This is twice as much as the standard offer, with a longstanding and established client base. Yada yada yada. All right, you guys know how I feel.
Super interesting. It's also interesting the way they describe this, because I actually own I'm landlord for a couple of cell phone towers. Like where they've come in and they've put the towers on your property and then they pay you. It's actually really, it's really lucrative as a landlord. Like you can get thousands of dollars a month, triple net, like with no work whatsoever. It's really pretty great. But it's interesting the way they describe this. Like by and large, my experience with being a landlord for cell phone towers is they have sold, most of these big companies, AT&T, Verizon, and folks like that, they have sold off their towers to third-party companies that are now managing those towers for them.
There's REITs that all they do is towers.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting they describe AT&T and Verizon are like their customers. And I guess maybe it's not actually the tower. These guys are just dealing with the equipment. Is that the way I should understand this?
It's kind of hard to tell. That's what I'm trying to parse. So it says that merging networks and overlaying technology onto existing structures is 80% of their services. So I kind of read this as there's a tower and you want to hang more stuff on the top of the tower, you hire these guys and they come in. That's kind of how I read it.
Yeah, because there's the – okay, so now I'm getting my head around it. There's the tower itself, which is like the physical infrastructure and the power and then the connection to kind of the backbones of telecom, right? But then there's the actual hardware on there, and each individual company – still runs their own hardware on that tower. They're just out of the tower. AT&T is out of the tower business and stuff like that.
And they may lease some of that hardware that's, you know, mounted to the towers. But like, I think what is nice about this business and where they sit in like the path of progress is that that technology is constantly becoming obsolete. Like whether it's 3G, 4G, 5G, or just, you know, like greater, you know, efficacy of the technology, they're constantly having to replace it. But then there's also a maintenance component. Like these things can't just stay up there forever and not be taken care of.
Yeah. They get hit by lightning or flooded or whatever. So it is interesting you say that about like the upgrade path and all that kind of stuff. So we do have a silent guest listening to today's recording, and they just texted me and said, my 2 cents on this deal from my old job, updating and installing 5G on towers was a huge push over the past 2 to 3 years. The amount of tower servicing could drop off meaningfully in the next 2 years. In other words, given this business was only, you know, founded in 2009, you know, we may be in a situation here where somebody's trying to sell it right at the very peak of kind of demand and performance. If the whole 5G push is going there.
I looked at a real estate deal a few years ago that was a piece of dirt with a tower on it with a lease in place, but the lease was expiring and the sell, you know, the tower, I think it's like American Tower is the big one. They didn't want to renew because it was not really, like, I think as you know, more infrastructure gets developed, certain towers become less attractive or obsolete as bigger ones go up and as technology improves. So instead of, like, in this case, instead of it being an asset, it was like this huge liability. Like, what do you do with this tower on this piece of property? And you got to get it down. I would think that this, you know, companies like this, it's probably a very, very small world. You know, once you're in the tower mafia or go to the tower conferences and all that kind of stuff. I think if you're in this world, there's probably a lot of other things you can do. They say that they've erected these things before. They do inspections or electrical work. One of my favorite businesses I've ever looked at provided generators for cell towers and maintain those generators because they have to have redundancy and backup power. So there's a lot of different things you can do, you know, in and around them. But if you're known for only being the person to, like, take one thing off the tower and put another on, or if you're known as the guy who just changes the light bulbs or whatever, you know, it may be hard to break into the other verticals here.
So it seems like there's sort of like a value stack. You've got the guy who owns the land, and then you've got the guy who owns the tower. And I think that is American Tower, right? Like, they're the big roll up in towers. Then you've got the guy who maintains and, like, climbs up the tower, which sounds like is often hired by either the guy that owns the tower or the other party, which is the carrier who leases or owns the equipment on the tower that actually provides service. Am I understanding it the right way? It's a complicated value stack.
Yeah. And the carrier, the way we're backing into it, is the carrier is hiring this company,
we think, to hang new equipment or maintain the equipment.
Yeah, go. We're doing a 5G rollout. Here's the towers, and submit a plan for it, and go have your people climb up there and go through that process.
But to our listeners' point, you know, the 5G rollout is probably, from an infrastructure standpoint, largely done, at least at this scale. My concern for a company like this is, like, yeah, you want to go court AT&T and Verizon, but they probably want to work with as few service providers as possible. And so if they have somebody who's like, hey, we'll handle the whole state of Texas for you, or we'll handle the Southwest for you, you kind of saying, hey, look, we can handle DFW for you and maybe a little bit of Louisiana, it doesn't really add much value to them. If anything, you're just kind of nipping at their heels.
To that point, Mills, I would really like to see a path to growth in this business that did not rely on those carriers at all, right? I would love to see a business here that, like, consistently was winning lower and mid-tier work in their geography, and there was plenty of it, right? You know, I don't want to buy a business that the only way to grow, like, maybe they've tapped out, you know, the little eddies around the large providers that you just described, Mills, and really the only way to grow is to win these moonshot deals that are honestly pretty unlikely. So I never love that when I see a sim of any kind and the only growth opportunities they can point to are big, you know, hunting elephants. I never like that.
So there are, I looked up the stats on carriers in the United States. You know, you're a testament to the anti-competitive FTC folks have been asleep at the wheel for the past couple of decades. Three carriers have 99% of the wireless customers in the United States. So it's AT&T is number one with 44%. Verizon has 32 or 33%. And then the combination of T-Mobile and Sprint, has the remainder. And then there's one additional kind of network, that's out there. So, I mean, I think it points out exactly the problem with the similar problem to, hey, I'm going to bet my whole business on being a supplier to Walmart and Target. You know, when they control those channels, or in the case of these networks, you know, you have AT&T and Verizon and T-Mobile, they kind of get to tell you what they're going to pay you. Like, it's not like you can go sign up a fourth carrier because it just doesn't exist.
I would hope, you know, to that point, Michael, I would hope there's other customers for this business. You know, there's a lot of other stuff up on towers that is not cellular equipment. You know, there's all kinds of point-to-point networking. You know, there's lots of stuff that goes up there. So I would love to see a more diverse business that's not relying on just one industry. And I would also love to see 10 years of revenue history, because to your point about 5G, I mean, it's cyclical, right? This whole industry is kind of, I would think, boom and bust, right? 6G is going to come out eventually, and there's going to be a whole deployment phase on that. So you probably want to buy one of these businesses at the trough in between deployment phases and sell it at the top right after a deployment phase.
the cynic in me about this, you know, this like contract thing is, you know, it's like, hey, we're about to sign this deal. I've just seen this so many times where, you know, it's almost like the broker has coached them like, hey, you need to have some like real, you know, tailwind kind of thing that we can, you know, just entice, you know, a buyer with. And I look at it and go, you know, two main thoughts. One, if this is so good and it's going to be so good, why in the world are you trying to price the value of your business without it being baked in? You know, if you wait, like in this case, if you wait 3 months, you might have an executed contract. That's worth something. If you wait 6 to 9 months, you're realizing revenue and growing cash flow off it. That's worth a lot more. But the bigger issue I see is, you know, if you're at $5.5 million of revenue, let's just say, I don't know, optimistically, aggressively, one of these things grows your top line by 30 or 40 or 50%, you know, per year for a couple years. That's like a massive operational risk. All the people who are involved in running this business and keeping the trains running on time are not equipped. There's that adage. I think it's a permanent equity thing, you know, like that all the systems in the business, you know, have to break each time the business doubles. And like, I see that as a major operational risk. Like, okay, I don't even get to get in and learn how to run this business as the status quo and try and grow it at like single digit or just low double digit growth. You're going to hand me something that, you know, I don't believe is actually going to happen. But it's, if it does, I'm going to barely be able to hold the reins and everything's going to break in my first 12 months of owning it. I view it very cynically for those reasons.
So I think as the resident nerd on the podcast with a computer science degree, I think it's worth talking about the potential technology risk around this. Like we are having a couple of trends happening. One is like there's a ton of money being thrown into all the low Earth orbit satellites. So, you know, the Starlink stuff, the Bezos Amazon version of that. Like the difference between those and like the sat phones that we had when we were like younger. Did you guys ever use a sat phone? It would take like a second for the signal to get.
Yeah, like the briefcase phone. Yeah. Like you're like James Bond from the '80s. Yeah.
So those, the satellite phones, like the satellite phones, the way they've historically worked is they put one satellite way up in geostationary orbit, like way, way out there. But that's very different than the low Earth orbit satellites, which are much closer. So the speed of light to go back and forth and therefore the latency makes doing internet and potentially kind of cell and telecom service over those satellites, over Starlink, much more approachable than this. So yeah, you have these towers going on and that's coming from kind of the top end of a threat to this business. The other end of the threat to the tower business is that you start to see a lot of like the crypto style stuff trying to create alternative distributed networks. So like Helium is a good example there. Like they're in assuming they don't like abscond with all the money to Brazil, like a lot of crypto projects, like you're seeing them try to create alternative networks of 5G as well that are going to start to eat into what the carriers have. And you're already starting to see some of the carriers back when Helium was a bit more like, in favor before crypto crashed earlier this year. And you're starting to see those carriers start to create phones and systems where you can not necessarily use their network, but you can use 5G on some of these alternative networks as well. So like, yeah, it's not going to happen in the next 10 years, but long-term, like the telecommunications infrastructure isn't going to look like it is today so much. And for me, that's something I would think about, you know, somebody who likes to own stuff for long-term.
So like the transition almost from like stationary ground-based to things that are a little bit more like geospatial.
Yeah. You have the LEO, the low Earth orbit satellites are potentially a threat at some point. And that's I talked to my telecom friends and they're like, yeah, that's realistic. Like, and then I talked to other telecom friends and they're like, it's not realistic. So the jury's still out on that. And some smart listeners may tell us what they think as well. But then there's also like getting eaten from the bottom where like Helium and stuff like that, like are starting to create alternative ground-based networks as well. So you're getting basically these, the American tower business is getting sandwiched from both sides potentially by technology over the next couple decades.
So Michael, I hear all that. I think that's super interesting. Let me be devil's advocate for you a little bit. Does that really matter? Like assuming you get convinced to buy, maybe not this one, but you get convinced to buy a tower maintenance business. And you think, yeah, over the next 1 or 2 decades, stuff's going to reconfigure, right? For sure. But you know, I'm buying a good business for 3x cash flow, right? This one's priced at 4, but 3 to 4x cash flow. I think I've got, you know, decent growth prospects in my industry, and I got 20 years to figure that out. Like how much should a buyer really wait, you know, 20 year out disruption, which is really hard to predict, you know, versus I got a near term business case to, you know, I'm getting a fair price. I got a near term business case to grow this business. I don't need to be thinking about 20 years from now.
I think there's a good reason to do exactly what you're saying and just ignore it. I just thought it was interesting.
No, it's super interesting. But like, I mean, I think there's a lot of businesses out there today, right, that kind of fit that, you know, fundamental disruption likely on a 10 to 20 or 30 year time horizon.
Well, right? I mean, it's to expand on your point, like it is a total buyer's trap. And to do, I think there's two buyer's traps that I see over and over again. And one is that one where you're like, oh, like parking lots are going to be like one of my angel investments that's done really well. Venture investments done really well is in a parking lot technology company. And like part of the reason, like it was such a good investment is all the VCs were like, oh, like, you know, parking lots are done because autonomous cars are going to be here in 5 years because Elon said it's going to happen. Like it was total crap. Like it's not, you know, it's always 3 years away. So I think that's one. And then I think the other one that comes to mind also, besides that, you know, overvaluing the technology threat is like secondarily, like just because everybody else got burned in the industry, people stay away from it. And I'll see like people are such herd followers that if something went terrible 5 years ago, they're suddenly like, oh no, like that roll up of survey companies didn't work out. So like we can't do that. It'll never work. Or that industry is like, it's whatever. Like you just shouldn't go there. Like it's impossible to make money there. And I see that. Oh, I think you're great about those points.
So like talk about, you know, are you talking about me and my industry, like e-commerce, right? E-commerce has had like the worst 24 months ever, went from belle of the ball to not invited to the party, right? Nobody wants to invest in an e-commerce business right now. I mean, there's a freaking, Michael, I saw you get roped into some thread on Twitter where some guy's like, yeah, this e-commerce thing is stupid. I don't know why people are buying all these warehouses. Like nobody's going to buy stuff on the internet in the future. And it's like, guys, get off Twitter. Like look around. Like e-commerce is going to be a thing. It's amazing how people trend follow.
I remember being a kid, you know, and we own the fireworks business. I remember being a kid and hearing my parents, my grandparents and stuff say, hey, like you need to go to school. You need to get some skills other than a future in our fireworks business. Cause we don't know if it's going to be around next year. And we keep selling more and more fireworks. Like you should come out to our warehouse. We have a lot of fireworks and they, every year I'm like, who's buying all this stuff? It turns out people really like fireworks and they're liking them more and more. So yeah, it's exactly right. But I think it presents such interesting opportunities. If you can find an industry where it's out of favor because it's just out of fashion. And you'll see PE do this all the time. Like I see PE, like you'll talk to PE people about a specific industry and they know that some roll up from 5 years ago got totally burned and they all talk. I mean, that's the other thing I've learned that's crazy about private equity is how chatty those guys are. Like they all just talk about deals all the time and they're all worried about how they look with the other PE managers, but they'll like stay away from something, even if it's obviously an amazing deal, just because they're worried about the optics. It's like, but it presents such an amazing opportunity if you're just like, oh, this is so out of fashion. Like, I'm going to go get into this. So to your point, like somebody who's a smart contrarian should be putting money into e-commerce now because this is a great time to buy. It's a great time.
Bill, go ahead and give them your email for those contrarians who want to reach out. Yeah,
if you want to reach out, you know where to find me. But like it's so classic, like in private equity. It's like the private equity, nobody gets fired for buying IBM, right? Like, no one gets fired for investing in the hot thing, but like you invest in something that's out of favor and all of a sudden it goes on the portfolio page of your website and everybody, you know, in private equity, they wear their Patagonia vests and talk at cocktail party. Like, can you believe Michael invested in that stupid thing? You know, like everybody knows that tower service companies are way on the outs. Like what a moron, right? You know, but you know, you might do great, but you know, nobody gets fired for investing in the hot thing. And that's been damn pretty obvious over the past few years, I think, in crypto and in venture and a lot of other things.
I had this example of that just really quick, like maybe 8 or 10 years ago, was selling a sand mine. and it was like around the fracking, you know, heyday. And every single buyer we talked to was like, is it fracking sand? Like, can we use it for, he was like, no, it's just regular plain old aggregate, like goes into roads and concrete. And they were like, nope, no, all we need is fracking sand. I'm like, it's in South Carolina. Like, where are we going to frack here? But it was just one of those things. It's like, hey, if it's fracking sand, we'll buy it, but regular sand, no way.
So funny. Here's another question I have. And then I think we've beat this one to death. Why hasn't somebody rolled this up already? That's kind of my, you know, like, why are we the lucky buyer at this one? Like, this seems like such a recurring revenue thing, like durable type stuff, and trading it just over 4x EBITDA. Why hasn't like somebody created a roll up of these things already? Or why is this deal not part of one?
I don't know. I mean, that's like the perpetual question, right? That we always ask. Like, a lot of these businesses are, I think a lot of times you see them for sale, right? And your initial spidey sense goes up and you go, oh yeah, I've heard of this business being rolled up. Like, there's a thesis to roll up this business. I get it. And then you read the sim and you're like, oh, because it's not really in that business, or it's like just over here on the side, or there's something wrong with it, or it's 75% residential or whatever. And the broker tries to position it as, you know, commercial elevator maintenance, like we did on a prior episode, that's getting rolled up like crazy. But then we look at the deal, it's like, oh, there's a lot of residential, there's some stuff that's wrong with it, they don't work with the biggest brand or whatever, or there's a someone, their big competitor in their territory already got bought and rolled up, right? So they can't get bought and rolled, you know, there's like all those types of things where you realize it's not quite on thesis.
I think people look at roll-ups kind of homogeneously too, but they're so different. Like, the level of earnings of a business and where it fits in, whether or not it's a candidate for a roll up, is largely dependent on like how mature the roll up is of that vertical or that niche. Like, we've talked about it with, you know, vet clinics or, you know, behavioral health. I think we've talked about a few dentist practices. Like, those are very mature roll ups and the systems are there and in place to move down the food chain in terms of they can acquire and roll up lower levels of earnings. For a business like this, that is probably not a very mature roll up, the level of earnings has to be incrementally higher because they don't have all the kinks worked out. They don't have a mature process and a system for rolling them up. And especially if it's a service-based business like this, it's got to be of a certain size. I mean, I know that they happen, but, you know, businesses that generate less than $1 million in EBITDA, and I don't think this business probably actually generates as much free cash flow as they say, they are very, very, very difficult to roll up if they're service-based.
All right. Well, cool. I mean, I think this is a super fun space. I mean, it comes back to kind of what we were talking about in the pre-show. Like, how do you identify what services businesses actually have significant moats beyond, hey, I'm a really good operator, and you know, you develop some established relationships, and then how much can you bet on that as a buyer? I think it's just a fascinating way to kind of think about stuff. So
yeah, one more thought about that. Like, I would put this in the category of businesses that are, you know, are service-based, they're B2B, but they deal with big kind of clunky, sticky, high barrier to entry customers. And I really, really like these, but you have to know that you're going to deal with customer concentration, and the moat is some relational, some kind of historical performance of work together. Like, any, like, people who service railways, those are incredible businesses. It's like a Wild West because you just cannot get in with the rail company. But there's businesses, there's so many services around rail, but you're going to have one or two customers. And so it scares a lot of, you know, professional buyers away. Billboard companies are this way. If you do anything service related for billboards, there's just not that many operators. DOT work, municipal work, prisons, like, you can't just waltz in there like knocking on somebody's door in a B2C or residential capacity. So the barriers to entry are higher, but the customer relationships, once you have them, are more valuable. I would put this in that same kind of category. You know, cell towers are in that same camp, that it can be very good, but it can also, you know, theoretically go away overnight because of that customer concentration.
Yeah, Mills, this reminds me of the conversation that you and I had when we were camping a couple of weeks ago, about kind of how good business can be that maintain heavy CapEx infrastructure. Like, you were talking about the business that maintained all the vegetation underneath the high tension power lines, like all across, I forget which region it was, and what a great business that was, right? It just spit off cash. So I would love to maybe close with a challenge to our listeners. We would love to review and see more businesses kind of in this B2B services, maintain your CapEx infrastructure category, because there's all kinds of different niches. There's all these huge CapEx heavy businesses that need to maintain that CapEx and then don't want to do it. And they contract it out to service providers. We'd love to see more. So tweet us deals in that vein on Twitter. We would love to do more of them.
Super cool. All right. And listeners, so if you would like to see the link to this deal, sign up for our newsletter. You can do that through the Twitter profile for Acquisitions Anonymous or on our, I guess through our Twitter profile is the easiest one on review. So, in the show notes too. Yeah. Join the hundreds of other people on our newsletter and you'll get alerted about every new episode and links to every deal. So, super cool one. And yeah, send us more stuff. Super cool. All right, guys. We'll catch you next week. Great job.